Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Me Teacher, a podcast for educators, where we, the teachers, become students ourselves. I'm your host, Jacob Chastain, and today we will be talking about coaching, teaching, and the odd relationship these sometimes build within the teacher that has to do both. Today, I have with me a colleague of mine, Mrs. Ha. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
Yes?
Yes.
How's your summer rolling? I know I'm intervening on your summer.
It's been good. I'm having an interesting summer because I am recovering from hip surgery.
Yay!
So getting to relax quite a bit. Definitely ready to get back to the grind, though.
Good. And well, my podcast is here for that purpose. Now, just a little backstory of kind of why I wanted to have this podcast specifically with you is, you know, just watching you, you know, as an educator, you handle yourself with a lot of caring that I think is really desired in teachers in education. It's something that students want and colleagues want and principals want and all of that. So that's definitely a part of why I wanted to have this conversation. But more so, I wanted to talk about how you handle being a coach. Because a lot of people that listen to this podcast are going to, one, either have the desire to be a coach. Mm-hmm. Or they're coaches already and they're starting to kind of feel that pressure build up as after school practices build up and grading papers build up and all this other stuff that goes with coaching.
Right.
And I kind of wanted you to be the guru and help these people.
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. No pressure.
Right.
And just because I've seen you handle it, pretty well. So I really want, to kind of dive into that. But before we really get into the nitty gritty of coaching and teaching, mm-hmm. And the relationship between the two, I just want to ask just to give people some background. How'd you get into teaching? Where are you at now? Where did you start?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I feel like how I became a teacher is a very typical answer with, I grew up and knew that teaching was something I wanted to do. I played teacher with my friends. I was constantly trying to surround myself with kids that were younger than me. And, just by doing, like babysitting and working at daycares. And, I got to, spend like 9 different summers going to Mexico and getting to kind of teach, the orphans that were there that I got to work with. And so I feel like basically since I was a child, teaching was always something that I wanted to do. And so when it came time to go to college and pick a major, it was automatically education. And I just knew that that was exactly what I wanted to do. Now, I thought I wanted to do elementary education. And so I spent all 4 years of my time at A&M studying to be an elementary teacher. So studying how to teach children how to read and teach children how to even start with math, like how to count and things like that. And so through some very strange events at job fairs and networking, ended up getting an interview to teach 8th grade math. So I kind of got thrown into middle school, which is not what I studied, and also kind of got thrown into coaching with that as well.
So you wanted to do elementary?
Yes.
And that's kind of what you went into all these job fairs and interviews with?
Yes.
Did you have interviews before the 8th grade? Or was that your first one?
I had one before, and it was at a charter school. Mm-hmm. And then I had also one in Fort Worth ISD. And both of those, I wasn't sure what I was interviewing for. I wasn't sure. Like, the charter school has both elementary grades and middle school grades. Mm-hmm. And then Fort Worth ISD, they do it very differently where they put you in a pool. And if you get through the first round of interviews, you are accepted into that pool, and then principals like grab teachers from that pool.
Yeah.
So, what happened is that I was at the job interview, the fair, not the job interview, the fair. And, I had talked to actually Stacey Hammer in Birdville ISD at the time. And she talked to me and it was fine and normal. I showed her my resume and she took it. And, I found out later that she had starred my application to give to the elementary school principal. But to an old friend's father who was an assistant, the people in district, the very important people in district. I cannot think of the word, but I just want to go say hi because he works in Denton ISD now. Mm-hmm. And he was like, "Hey, have you talked to Birdville?" I was like, "Yeah, a little bit." He's like, "Well, come back later. I'll introduce you." So I came back later and he took me over to Stacey Hammer and he was like, "You have to hire her right now. You need to hire her." And she told me later on that once he said that, she then took my application for herself for Richland Middle School and knew that they had to have me, which was not my plan at all. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
So So you're thrown in, right? You get the job, I guess, as an eighth grade teacher. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts at this point? Are you freaking out because this isn't what you studied or?
Yes. I'm freaking out. Yes. And the coaching part was not a part of the idea when I went in either. Cause I, walked in and doing the interview and they asked me some question and I answered with, well, I grew up playing sports and I was on a soccer team and I was a captain of that and used kind of my sports background to answer a question on problem solving or leadership or something. And when I mentioned sports, they said, interesting, we also have a coaching position available. Would you be interested? And I said yes.
Of course.
Of course. Why not? Why not say yes to everything they offer you, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I was freaking out a lot because not only was I being asked to teach something that I had no idea what I was doing, eighth grade math, not an easy thing. I was also being thrown into coaching, which I also didn't study in undergrad. I didn't study how to be a coach. I didn't do anything like that. And the only knowledge I had was personal background. For both of those things. The only reason why I thought I could do eighth grade math is because I took it one time.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I passed eighth grade math, so maybe I could teach it.
Yeah.
And I wasn't even certified for it at the time. They told me, just go take the test over the summer, and if you don't pass the 4-8 math, then we'll put you somewhere in sixth grade. Because I was certified up through sixth grade in all subjects. And I was like, oh, okay. So took the test over the summer and passed and there I was.
Man, that's such a, like a, I feel like this is like a classic kind of teacher story of, hey, first year, here's all this new stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
When you started coaching and teaching, so you're in already, right? Mm-hmm. You're hired.
Yes.
The world is more or less collapsing around you. I don't know. Collapsing might be a little extreme, but you know, something's happening.
Mm-hmm.
What's going through your head? What was the balancing like before you knew how to balance?
Yeah. So, there was a joke that, the kitchen is where I cried and I cried a lot, my first year. And it was always in the kitchen. I don't know why it was the kitchen, but it
comfort
was.
Place.
Yeah, I guess so. So yes, there is lots of, I mean, first year teaching anything is difficult. And any teacher will tell you that your first year is hard, no matter if you are super prepared and that's all you've studied your entire life or not. It's just a hard place to be.
Sure.
So there were definitely, it was not perfect and it was definitely not easy, but I feel like I had some sort of an advantage because I am not one to want to do things by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So the moment that I knew what my world was going to look like for the next school year, I was immediately seeking out people to help me and to keep me afloat. And I got really lucky in that. I was able to, I think probably the biggest thing that helped me classroom wise was being able to go to that Kagan training in Orlando.
Yes.
Because I got hired super early on in the summer. They offered to pay for me to go to 12 days in Orlando, Florida. Who's going to turn that down?
Right.
At Disney World and get some training. And not only was the training super beneficial, I use Kagan all the time, but I also got to form some really awesome relationships with teachers that I was going to be working with.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I feel like I was able to kind of cope with the massive challenge that was in front of me. And it started before school even started. I remember the night before our Meet the Teacher, which is the Saturday before school starts. Mm-hmm. I was working in my classroom at like 8:30 p.m. Still had hours of work to do.
I remember this. Yes. I do remember this.
Yes. And some very good friends, the Bowles particularly, came into my room and said, "Stop what you are doing." I was like, "I'm not finished." And they took over all of the things that I wanted to get done. John Bowles started hanging up decorations in my room of like posters and gave me a task. Like, you go do this and I will do this. And I was able to get out of there in like 30 minutes because they were already showing me and guiding me in how to set those boundaries and how to balance and mm-hmm. to prioritize. And I think the only reason why it was as successful as it was, although difficult, was because I had those people that came in and entered into that struggling with me and were willing to take some of that burden off of me. Yeah. And I think a big part of that, like I was saying, is that I felt like I had that advantage is that I was willing to let people in. I was willing to let people know that I was struggling. I was willing to let people help me instead of just saying, no, I'm doing this myself. And you don't get to help me, and too prideful to allow anyone else to kind of take some of that struggle off.
Yeah. And so, every episode that we've done of this podcast so far, mm-hmm. at some point, some teacher has mentioned the value of having not necessarily always friends, but people that are there to kind of support this burden.
Yeah.
Because it is, I mean, teaching is so huge.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you're in charge of a lot of things, but it's so much pressure on one individual.
Yeah.
That, you know, especially when you're thrown in at the very beginning, mm-hmm. you know, right in that first year, but even years after that.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to, you have to split it up. Like, there's no way one person can do everything.
Exactly.
In this profession, like, at all. Yeah. It's just not going to happen.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's really, I think it's a really solid point just to kind of point out for everyone listening is that, you know, if you are struggling with something, you know, don't be a man about it, right? Yeah. Don't be a strong woman about it. Just be like, you know what? I need help.
Yeah.
And find it from whoever it is, whether it's your partner or the team lead or whoever it is, your principal, it doesn't really matter. Moving on from there, you get this help and you're kind of stressing out, but you kind of start, I guess, when you had that help, did it change how you approached it? Did you always go to that, or were there moments where you tried to take on too much as the year kind of started to progress?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel that the way that our school is set up, just with having PLC, like that planning time that you get with your partner, and our school is so focused on collaboration, I feel that there was very few times where I think I bit off too much,
mm-hmm.
where I just couldn't chew it all. But I think there were also moments where I thought I could write my own test, or I thought I could, like, by myself.
Yeah.
And I thought I could design my own lesson by myself, but I feel like that was not necessarily shut down, but there was some very humbling moments where, like my teaching partner, Chris Alegria, or John Bowles would kind of look at what I had done and then professionally and critically would say, look at all these holes,
mm-hmm.
look at all these places where this is not going to work. And so I felt like there was different structures in place to where I could try to kind of exceed on my own or do things a little bit more independently, but also that never really like fell through where everything did collapse around
mm-hmm.
me. So I think it's kind of a combination of both, where I did have that built-in time where I had to be collaborative, and then, but I also kind of got time to try to go off on my own. But normally on that own part, let me write back to those people around me that were so willing and just to be there and to help.
So you're getting help in the classroom. Did you have help kind of in the coaching realm or dealing with that How did that differ?
Yeah, so my first year of coaching looked very different than most people when they're coaching because I was not in the coaching athletic period.
Oh.
I was supposed to be, but through through weird scheduling or whatever, I was not in the actual coaching period. So I wasn't in first period athletics and I wasn't in eighth period athletics. So the only time that I had for coaching was before and after school. Now, this made getting really into coaching very difficult because not only was I only seeing part of practice, I was also getting less time with my other coaches. So I wasn't getting the same amount of time that I was getting with my math department where I could collaborate and work together and get help as I was with I was getting less time with my coaches. So it made it kind of difficult to really, take on coaching in full. I kind of felt like I was doing it at 75%. Like I was in math 100% and then coaching, I was kind of a coach, kind of not really. And the students, the athletes could tell that as well.
Mm-hmm.
They barely knew who I was because the time that I did see them before and after school were only with the athletes who had made the team. So I wasn't seeing the off season. I wasn't seeing like 40% of the athletes because I wasn't there.
Yeah.
And so that alone, I feel like made coaching especially difficult my first year. It took a lot longer for me to get to know them, especially my seventh graders who I wasn't seeing in the classroom. I was seeing some of the eighth graders in my classroom, so that helped. But, and to build those relationships with the other coaches was also very difficult because they were getting a lot more time with one another and I just wasn't.
So did you have like this almost like an outsider's...
Yes.
That, like that feeling when you get, when you're really not a part of the group.
Yeah.
It's like, absolutely. Hey guys.
Yeah. And I think if you were to ask the other three coaches that they would feel the exact same way, that I was kind of never really there and I desperately wanted to be. And I think that was probably the hardest part. It wasn't the balancing of coaching and teaching. It was the desire to really be a coach and really be a part of that world and not getting to.
Mm-hmm.
And I desired, like I said before, like with my math department and just the other eighth grade teachers in general, like with you too, you were there. Like I felt like I got to have stronger relationships with those people because of the time that I was getting to spend. And I desperately wanted those with the coaches I was working with, especially to receive support.
Mm-hmm.
There was so much I didn't know. And I didn't get that as quickly as I would have liked to have it. So that dynamic alone made the coaching more difficult than I think it should have been.
Yeah.
But I also think at the same time, because I wasn't 100% involved in coaching, I was kind of able to have that 25% that I wasn't getting with coaching was getting to be applied in the math realm.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I would necessarily change the way that was, because I feel like maybe... Because there was less time in the coaching, more time in the math, that I was getting a better handle on math quicker, maybe. So maybe it helped me in the classroom, but I think coaching would have been easier if it wasn't like that.
Do you think that you could have, I mean, do you really think that you could have developed as a professional in both equally if you had equal time? Like, is that even humanly possible?
I don't know. I don't know. It would take longer than a year. So instead of getting that one kind of like crazy mess up first year where you were just trying to survive.
Yeah.
I think if I had equal time in both, it would have taken me longer to develop as a classroom teacher. And it would have taken me longer to develop as a coach if I didn't get to, like, spend as much time in the classroom as I did my first year. And then have my second year where I got to spend a lot of time with the coaches and with the athletes, but I felt like I had a handle on math.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's possible within one academic year, but I think it would have been possible eventually. But I think I would have struggled a lot longer in my math classroom.
Yeah.
So I think that's the reason why I wouldn't change it. Because I feel so much more confident in my classroom than I think I would have last year. I think I would have struggled a lot more my second year in the classroom if I would have been 100% in both my first year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. One of those things is kind of like it's a good thing in disguise, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. So, if you're feeling, I mean, if you're listening to this and you're like, man, I really want to be more into coaching, or if you really want to be more in your classroom, whichever one is taking the brunt of the work, take it from Ha right here is that you're having, you know, it might be worth it in the end to not necessarily focus on one more, but just embrace that time.
Mm-hmm.
Because time is the one thing that everyone wishes they had in teaching. But now I kind of want to move into, before we get into the relationships with your athletes in the classroom and how that affects stuff, which I definitely want to get to, I want to get people kind of just a visual, both for the people at our school and other schools that don't really know what a life of a coach is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see you guys and y'all are tired when you come in after games and you're always there and you're doing all this other stuff. But I think a lot of people don't really know what a coach's schedule like. Now, obviously, yours might differ from someone else's, but give us a kind of a rundown of what's life like as a coach, both in how it connects to your teaching, after school, and everything else.
Yeah. So, sleepless would probably be the first word. So during, let's just say that it's during season, whatever season that may be. It also kind of depends if I'm coaching both 7th and 8th grade or just one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So this past year, we went to, instead of coaching all four sports between all four of us, we kind of split it up. So I did not coach volleyball. So during volleyball season, the first part of the year, my coaching life was very minimal, which means I get to sleep in later. I don't have morning practice.
Yay.
I also get to go home at a decent time. I don't have after school practice, and I don't really have games. So I would work some of the games, but not every week.
Mm-hmm.
So I get a lot more time at home, which is really nice to be able to be home and be conscious when I am at home. but basketball season, I had 7th grade and 8th grade. So I was at school before 6:45 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I, for some reason, if I wasn't necessarily prepared for my math class that day or that week, or for some reason that's a heavy week for teacher prep, I would be there earlier than that because I have to get it done. And because practice starts pretty much right at 7, I can't show up at 7. There'll be students standing outside freezing. So I have to be there early. So I'm getting up early, being there super early, and then have almost 2 hours of practice. And then I have to go teach all day. And then I have at least 2.5 hours of practice after school with my 8th graders.
So it's like another day built into a day.
Yeah, exactly. It is. And it also puts a little bit more stress on the math part because I'm not available for tutorials. I have to be in practice.
Yeah.
And I have to be active in practice. I can't just like have my tutorials sitting on the bleachers. Like if the kids are coming to tutorials, they need help. I can't just give them a worksheet.
Mm-hmm.
So that puts, I think, not necessarily more stress, but I think more guilt on my part of just not being able to be there fully for my students because it's basketball season. And that's why I tell them all the time, sorry, I have practice or I have a game. And so if I do have a game, especially basketball, because the game doesn't end when someone gets to a certain amount of points, it ends when the clock runs out.
Noted.
Well, yeah, which could be good or bad. I'm not getting home until 9:30, 10 o'clock at night because just games. And sometimes refs are running late or sometimes the other team is running late or sometimes there's more fouls. Like there's just no way of knowing exactly when I'm going to get home. And then next morning I have to be at school 6:45 again. And that's not even taking into consideration what I have to do for my classroom.
Yeah.
That's
what I'm thinking about. I'm like, when do you grade? When do you lesson plan? When do you do all this?
Mm-hmm. And so I think that really goes back to really relying on my support that I have within the math department. They know when busy season is. And so sometimes they take on more of that kind of more tedious work. So maybe during PLC, I am merely just, I'll be the scribe. And they're coming up with lesson plans and I'm typing them.
Mm-hmm.
Like kind of the more less time-consuming parts of what it means to be a math teacher. So I'm not going to be responsible for creating tests necessarily. We're going to come up with different ways to grade. So John Bowles, quote, you do not need practice grading, they need practice doing.
Yeah.
And so finding little shortcuts that way. So if I'm grading over, or they're doing a skill over writing linear equations, I'll give them an assignment to do, and then I'll find like three problems that really test those skills, and those are the three that I grade. So instead of grading 20 problems per child, I'm grading three. So it cuts down my time a lot.
Yeah, and grading can be its own podcast it really does help teachers to know those shortcuts, but that's such a small thing.
Yeah.
You know, that John quote, he might've said it in his podcast episode. I'm not sure. Someone has said it somewhere, but you know, where it's, you know, you don't need practice grading.
Right.
And teachers, I think, forget that.
Yeah. And I think a big part of it is just knowing what is important enough for your time. Cause I just don't have a whole lot, especially if I don't want to be a zombie. Like, I'm already living on an insane amount of caffeine. You can ask pretty much anyone in the school. Milton left a sticky note in my room saying no more caffeine. It's a problem.
Yeah.
So I cannot choose to spend my time doing things that are not important. Especially if I want to spend any time with my husband. Or, you know, like, do something for myself.
That's have a life.
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let alone get a good night's rest. Like, there's just, and I think that's probably like the biggest piece of advice I could give for anyone who is not necessarily like coaching and teaching, but yes, coaching and teaching, since that's what this is about, is just like figuring out, okay, what are the things that have to get accomplished and prioritizing them. And then you've got to be a master at time management. You have to. And you've got to figure out exactly what that looks like. And I feel like when people say time management, everyone thinks of like, these are my things on my to-do list that I have to get done. But I think this past year, especially, something that I prioritized was just like getting a chance to relax and like not work.
Mm-hmm.
And giving myself those little moments so that I could continue to be sane and enjoy what I'm doing. Because if I'm not enjoying coaching and if I'm not enjoying teaching, and all of my time is coaching and teaching, I will be miserable.
Yeah.
And I will be stressed out all of the time and exhausted. And it's not worth it. And so, there, like, what some of the coaches on the girls' side, what we did this year is during our conference time, which ended up being the same time, we would play games. Like, we would play basketball games or frisbee games or... maybe we would all work out together or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas that 45 minutes, I could go and sit in my room and lesson plan and work and get as much done in that 45 minutes as I could. Or I could take a little bit of time and take a break from all of it and do something that I love to give me a little bit of a boost so that I can continue working at an insane pace for the rest of the time that I am there.
And that's... I mean, 80-20 is what I come to, is where, you know, it's, you know, 80%, you know, what really is the bulk of your work?
Yeah.
And from there, it's just cutting the fat of everything. So what did you find yourself cutting out of your schedule in order to keep your sanity, have that time, but at the same time be far more efficient?
Yeah. Again, I feel like I'm repeating myself, but... I mean, not recreating the wheel. You'll hear that all the time in education. Like, if someone else has already created something for this standard that you want to teach, go in and modify it instead of creating your completely own new, amazing, ha-only version of how to teach linear equations. Like, it's just not... That's silly. And yeah, you might get a whole lot of pride out of creating your own masterpiece of a lesson plan, but... is that really worth it? Like, do you need that gratification of creating your own thing from scratch to teach? Like, the whole point is so that students are, yes, engaged and hopefully trying to enjoy themselves a little bit in the lesson.
Mm-hmm.
But the goal is so that they understand and become more confident in whatever standard that you are trying to get across to them.
Yeah.
So you've got to, like, I feel like trimming a lot of the fat was not necessarily thinking about me, but thinking about what is best for them.
That's a really hard concept.
Yeah.
Surprisingly.
Yeah.
You know, it's just in a profession that's all about students, you know, teachers walk in, and I'm totally a part of this too, is you walk in, you're like, I'm awesome. I'm going to be awesome right now.
Yeah.
But it's not. It doesn't matter if you're awesome or not. It matters how well you can translate whatever it is that you're trying to teach them, and mm-hmm. that they get it.
Yeah.
And that they can apply it later and exactly. not just get it for 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. And that taking that step is probably the first step. It's probably something all teachers realize probably in their first year is, mm-hmm. oh, this isn't about me.
Oh.
Like, not at all.
Not at all.
And yeah. If you can find the balance, that's awesome. But generally, you know, I think people start falling to the side of caution to where it's just, okay, what's the best way I can get this to them?
Yeah.
In the least amount of work for both of us.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to work any more than you want that extra work.
Right.
They want, you know, the kids like learning, and they're happy when they understand something. Mm-hmm. Any teacher's seen that.
Yeah.
But to get them to that point, takes skill.
Yeah.
Let's take a step back. You're practicing and doing all of these like trimming things in for your classroom mm-hmm. in order to get your lesson plans done.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned briefly that you couldn't, you know, do tutorials all the time. So yeah. How did you manage tutorials? What'd you do?
I referred them to other teachers.
Yes.
Yes. That I think that's also a trick of the trade that your more experienced teachers know about. And your first year, you kind of have to learn the hard way. Doing favors for one another, not being selfish. So, for example, during those busy seasons, Allegria or Better would take my students for tutorials.
Mm-hmm.
And I would make their copies for them.
Yes.
So just finding ways to do that. So yeah, I had to rely on other teachers. Like there wasn't a choice mm-hmm. or else my students would suffer. There's no way to do both on my own. Yeah. So tutorials that, and I think I'm still trying to figure out how to best do that, because I know for a fact that less students will go to tutorials if it's not with me,
mm-hmm.
because they have me and yeah. they know me and they know that I know them. And so I was, this past year especially, I struggled a lot with tutorial attendance, even though they knew and I knew that they needed to be there and we would make plans for them to go.
Yeah.
But they didn't want to go because it wasn't with their teacher. It wasn't with me. And that has nothing to do with me. It has to do with the fact that I see them all the time and they're familiar with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm still trying to figure out exactly how to accommodate that. And I think one way that is kind of helping that a little bit is just using the online resources that I have. So I have a smart board, which is awesome, and I can record my lectures or lessons or whatever, and I can set up, I have a YouTube account, and the videos for the lessons are all on that YouTube channel. And been using a website called Edpuzzle, which allows for videos that have embedded questions. And so finding alternative ways to a student coming to a class, like the traditional tutorial, they come mm-hmm. to your classroom, you sit down with them, you work through problems. I can refer them to these other resources where they can go home or to the library and they can go and see these videos and answer these questions and then return back to me and say, yes, I got it, or no, I didn't. And then I can find another alternative way to be able to meet that need that they have.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I'm going to rely heavily on that Edpuzzle and those recorded lessons. And then, I don't know, that's actually one thing I need to get some advice on from Allegria, who his classroom looks like a normal class before and after school all the time. He yeah. just always has kids in his tutorials.
Well,
I think that's just like the level, since he's pre-AP and he's just a difficult teacher in general
yeah.
to learn in, because it's just a hard class. I think that has something to do with it. So maybe I need to up the rigor. Maybe that's what they're telling me.
Yes, this is the secret.
Yes.
That's, just up the rigor and it'll be the rigor.
My class is too easy. That's how they don't go.
Yes. Now, your So tutorials, classroom management, all that good stuff happening in your classroom. How are you using this to kind of be a coach? Because I'm really curious at how, like, what does that look like when you're interacting with your students in kind of the athletics environment?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you change how you approach it? Do you follow the same rules? Like, mm-hmm. how does it look when you're in that different environment? As you as a teacher, how are you handling it different than your classroom, if at all?
Yeah. Well, I feel like when I'm in the gym, it is not necessarily less structured, mm-hmm. but maybe less serious, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, math, there's a test you have to pass. You know, you need to know these skills so that you can do well in the future. Education, super important for life and, like, growing and just, like, you know, doing well.
Yeah.
And becoming a good person in the math realm of things. Whereas in coaching, that's a choice. It's a privilege. It is not something that is required of you to be in athletics.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have, it's a different environment because 99% of the athletes want to be there. And they want to do the sports. And they want to become better athletes. And they want to learn more about the sports that they're interested in. And so because of that, the environment feels less serious. So I feel like I can relax more. Whereas in my classroom, I feel like I have to get these things done and I need to make sure they're understanding it and I have to have data and I need to, you know, have all these different like set in stone things to make sure that I'm doing my job well. Whereas in athletics, it feels like how can I make them a better athlete?
Mm-hmm.
And it's normally their choice. And if they don't want to do it, then they get out of athletics.
Yeah.
So it's less about like making students do something. It's less about making athletes do something. And it's more about doing it with them and enjoying it with them. Like, I would love to have a math class where every student wants to be there and loves math and
can't wait
to be a mathematician.
Yeah.
That's just not the reality. So I feel a lot more relaxed when I'm in the gym. And not less professional, but just less, I don't know, maybe less separate from them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm an athlete, they're an athlete, so it kind of feels a little bit more on the same level of things.
Yeah.
Whereas in the classroom, I'm a teacher, they're students. So...
Yeah, I guess on some level you're not always teaching them something new. I mean, if you're working on basketball, more than likely the kids there have played basketball before. They know the rules generally, right? You know, depending on who it is, but they know something.
Yeah.
But you know, they can walk into a math classroom or a reading classroom or a social studies classroom. They have no idea what's getting hit, like what they're getting hit in the face with.
It's like you're speaking a foreign language.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's a bigger barrier to entry.
Exactly.
And you know, the vibe is different, I guess. If you think about it in terms of being in a classroom, because once you start talking, once your students understand the content you're working on, the way you talk to them is different.
Yeah.
But when you're coming from it, like, all right, this is brand new. You need to listen.
Yes.
You
don't panic.
Yeah. There's a different vibe.
Yeah.
From those two. So I guess that's kind of what you're pointing at in coaching is where you're more, there's not such a barrier to entry, I guess.
Yeah. And that, I think that word barrier is like the perfect word for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like relationships get built maybe a little quicker in athletics because that barrier is not as thick between coach and athlete versus teacher and student. And so if you were to compare it like at the beginning of the year versus the end of the year, I think the classroom and the gym look a lot more similar. But I think if you were to compare it at the beginning of the year between the gym and the classroom, it looks very different. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the longer the school year goes on and the longer you have those students, the more it feels almost the same. Whereas at the beginning, it feels very different.
I don't think it's a secret that electives, you know, help build relationships with students through a variety of things. I mean, there are like, you know, sometimes grades can be a barrier to a student enjoying their elective.
Mm-hmm.
So guess what? You know, if they really like it, they generally get their grades up.
Yeah.
And if they, you know, sometimes they don't excel in classwork all the time, but they're a great athlete.
Right.
Or they're a great musician or a great singer or whatever it is that they're electing to do. So I am curious, just from the coaching perspective, that relationship that you're getting to build with them,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing the athletics with them, whatever it is that you're doing, whatever season you're in, I guess.
Yeah.
Has that positively affected your relationship with them on an academic level in the classroom, or are they separate?
Absolutely. They are 100% connected. Even within, so obviously I'm a girls coach, mm-hmm. so I get that relationship and that time with the girls primarily. The only time I really see the boys is cross country and track, and that's towards the end of the year. And even the boys that I have in my classroom that see me in the gym and see me coaching, there's a different relationship in my classroom because they're in athletics and I'm a coach,
mm-hmm.
even though I'm not necessarily coaching them.
Yeah.
And so it definitely affects the relationships that I have in my classroom and to a positive way, 100%. And that's one reason why I desire so badly for other teachers to attend the different events, not necessarily just the sporting events, but the band concerts and the choir concerts and the art shows, because I feel like whenever you get to see them in their comfort zone,
mm-hmm.
that whenever they come into your classroom, they kind of want to enter into your comfort zone, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So because I'm getting to coach them and getting to just have different conversations with them in the gym versus in the classroom, there's just more time for them in mm-hmm. athletics. There's not that certain standard they have to meet every single day. Like, yes, okay, I want to teach this athlete to serve a volleyball. Okay, well, I can show them the mechanics of that, and then they need to practice it over and over and over and over and over again. And there's that sense of satisfaction, just like in a math classroom or a reading classroom when you say, like, find the theme or, you know, solve for X.
Yeah.
Like, when they finally get it, there's that sense of satisfaction. But I feel like in the gym, it's more something they want to do versus something they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the classroom, it feels like more something they have to do.
Yeah.
Mainly versus something they want to do. And so I feel like because there's more time in the gym for those conversations and that there's a different type of relationship that happens in athletics that allows for a different type of relationship in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily better, just different.
Yeah.
And I also feel like we are kind of on the same playing field. Like, I love sports, they love sports. Like, there's common interests there, and it's easier to find with my athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's normally at least one thing with each student that I can relate to, but it takes some time to find it. But there's that immediate, when they walk in from the gym into my classroom, they're like, ha, we have something else, like, kind of in common.
Yeah.
You know? So I feel like that alone, again, I feel like it goes back to that barrier. Whereas, because I get to see them in coaching and we both know we love sports and we get to be in that environment together, that barrier in the classroom gets a little bit thinner just because of that familiarity, even.
Yeah. It's almost like having, you know, we all have those students who love our content.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
You know, I mean, I teach reading, and last year I had, you know, students who come in, they love books.
Yeah.
And that barrier between us was a lot smaller.
Yeah.
And, you know, we connected faster. Because of that, behavior between both of us is better. They usually get the content a little bit better because there's less walls up.
Right.
But then you have those kids that hate it or whatever, for whatever reason. And that they're the ones that you struggle with the most to try to get to. So I imagine. So, I mean, it's literally the same thing, but it's not in your class. So you have the extra little step,
yeah.
which is, hey, I'm a coach. You like sports.
Look at that.
We're going to do math.
We're friends. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's a perfect example. Yeah, because I feel like, as I'm reflecting, there's a student who, It's a very interesting student, but he really loved math.
Yeah.
And because of that, I felt like he wanted to be in my space, and that barrier got smaller and smaller a lot quicker than some of my students who didn't want anything to do with math and hated math and everything that ever had to do with math.
Mm-hmm.
And I can also tell, if I were to compare one student who hates math, who's not an athlete, versus another student who hates math, who is an athlete, it's easier to get the athlete who hates math to participate than it is to get the non-athlete who hates math to participate.
Yeah. I wonder if this is why, you know, just kind of brainstorming right now, I wonder if this is why there is a push to get kids into athletics programs. Like, you know, they always do it for, like, people, you know, spout, you know, the health benefits and right. all that. But on an academic sense, this seems like the most logical thing is that if you have more students in extracurricular activities,
mm-hmm.
it just lowers their resistance to other things.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. Because there was even, like, that's one reason why, as coaches, we like to ask the teachers to let us know if there's an issue with any of our athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Because typically, there was multiple times this past year where I would talk to students who weren't in my math class, but in someone else's math class, and in Vetter's math class, and Vetter would be like, hey, they're really struggling to participate, or they're giving me a hard time, or whatever, could you talk to them? And I would see them that day and have a conversation, and they would go back to class and do what they were supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because I made them do bear crawls. It was just because I was able to have that conversation and kind of call them and say, hey, you need to be doing this. You need to be meeting expectations because you kind of have these expectations in athletics, and you know this. You know that you have been called to be a leader at this school, but you are not showing this teacher the respect that they deserve. And that needs to happen. And I think that I totally agree that that is a big reason why we want students in, not necessarily athletics, but in some sort of elective that mm-hmm. they can enjoy and not just do because they need the credit, but find something that they can strive in, that they want to be in, because whatever teacher or coach or instructor they have, that person now has more pull on that student in every other aspect of their education.
Yeah. And any like leverage you can get.
Yeah. Any leverage you can get is good.
Yeah. There's students that you struggle with, but even with, you know, the good students are the ones that you never have problems with. Like, you still want all the connections that you can possibly have.
Right.
And the more you can get by having them, you know, already in something else where they have that connection,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can only see benefit from it, really.
Yeah.
I mean, unless they're having negative experiences, and that's a different type. That's a different conversation.
It's a different podcast.
Yeah, they're different issue. So you mentioned briefly that you can, you know, if someone's having trouble with the student, they can go to you, you know, mm-hmm. as a coach, like, hey, can you talk to them, whatever.
Yeah.
Have you ever felt that teachers rely on that too much? Or they go to you and they're like, hey, I don't know what's wrong, you know, punish him or something like that, to where the relationship you have is being abused. Not, you know, that might be too strong of a word, but it's right. being taken advantage of, I guess.
Yeah.
To where it's not necessarily benefiting you. Because you're yeah. building a relationship too with them when you're right. doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I don't think so. I think it's not used enough.
Okay.
Because I'm constantly reminding teachers, like, hey, remember, I have them this yeah. afternoon if you need anything. And I actually really enjoy those conversations with students, which I don't know is if that it's common, but to have those conversations of like, what are you doing? You are acting like a crazy person. Like,
yeah.
we need to get this together. Because I feel like that opportunity alone to meet a student when they are not following expectations and when they are causing trouble, to kind of show them, like, I'm here for you, and I'm going to call you out on this because I care. And if I didn't care, I would just let you act like a crazy person and ignore you.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't take the time, and I think I guilt my students a lot. I'm like, I'm taking so much time to have this conversation with you right now. I have so many other things I need to be doing, which is what I talked about earlier, like prioritizing your time and what yeah. you need to get done. So it is really a sacrifice. I mean, I enjoy it, but it sure. is a sacrifice to take the time to really have that conversation, and not just like a, you need to follow expectations because you have been told to, and get over it and go do what you need to do. Like, that is not the conversation that is going to be beneficial, and it's definitely not going to be long lasting.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take the time to say, hey, this is out of your character, or even if it is their character, you can call them out of that. You know, like, sure. You can say, I've seen better in you. Now, it might have only been for 3 seconds, but you've seen it. And so I actually wish that teachers would use that more.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that coaches would desire that more. And I feel like there are some coaches that will always refer to, oh yeah, I'll make them do bear crawls, or I'll make them run lines, or I'll make them whatever. And I don't necessarily feel like that is, like, it is definitely a way to get a student to behave, threatening bear crawls.
Sure.
And that does become beneficial, but not if that's the only thing that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely not if that is like the first thing that you do, because then they're going to stop caring, and they're going to blow you off, and they're going to act out more, and they'll be like, whatever, I'm not even going to do the bear crawls anymore. And that happens.
Yeah.
Like, that sort of discipline just doesn't work every single time.
Yeah. Top down discipline. I mean, it sometimes it works to, like, I guess, subdue whoever it is that you're trying to get.
Yeah.
But it's not going to work forever.
No, it's not. And especially if you never follow it up with a conversation.
Yeah.
Because our goal for coaches and teachers and parents, I mean, adults, when you look at a child, hopefully your goal is to show them, like, this is how you become a better person.
Yeah.
It's not like, this is how you master math. This is how you become the best athlete. It is, we're trying to shape their character,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily what they can do, but who they are.
Yeah.
And if you never follow up with that conversation, or you don't desire those conversations, especially when they're being turds, then I feel like you're wasting your time.
So is your relationship building? Because, you know, you are approaching it, you know, from this sense of, you know, like, caring, to mm-hmm. where, you know, you're not just there to be the mean old coach who, you know, knows, you know, gets to see them after school, and you get to punish them for skipping whatever they skipped, or whatever. But, you know, you're approaching it from, like, this caring perspective of, hey, you know what, I'm only spending this time griping at you
mm-hmm.
because I really want you to succeed.
Yeah.
Is that the same, do you have the same conversations with athletes as you do as people in your classroom, kids in your classroom that aren't athletes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I tell them that all the time. And I think that might be one thing that I see, and I mean, every teacher is different, but I feel like if teachers expressed more, like, the capacity at which they care for their students, because every teacher cares for their students.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be those few that you're like, oh, I can't stand them, but you still care for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't help it. And if you don't care for them at all, you're in the wrong profession.
Yeah.
Like, and I tell them this all the time, like, you are my kids. I spend more of my time with you than I do with anyone else. I don't even get to see my husband this much. And and even if they're not even my student or my athlete, there's one student that I had the privilege of having for a little bit this year, but when he was a seventh grader, they were doing remediation in the little gym and he got kicked out. I had no idea who he was. I had no idea what his name was, but I just stopped. I had the time and I stopped and I had a conversation with him, and I told him, the words were, I know you can be a good kid. And it looked like I had just, like, it was the first time anyone had ever said anything positive to him ever.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, and then I had him, and he told me this year that, you knew I could be good. You knew I can make the right choice. No one's ever said that to me before. And so I feel like teachers would make their lives way easier if they would just open themselves up a little bit to their students.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of build that identity in them of who they are, and that you do care. Like, yes, I get hurt a lot more by my students than other teachers do.
Yeah.
Like, not physically, but emotionally. Sure. Like, because I choose to be vulnerable with them. Like, there are moments where a kid will say something, I'm like, ow, that did not feel very good.
Yeah.
But I feel like the amount of times that happens is so worth the amount of times where I get that kid that is in my classroom and says, I remember you saying that I could be awesome. And that is worth every hurtful word any mm-hmm. student could say. And I might be making my job more emotional than it needs to be, but I can't help it. Like,
yeah.
They are my kids and I do love them dearly. And it doesn't matter if they're an athlete or not, or my student or not, if they are in my vicinity.
Yeah.
And I have a moment where I can build that relationship with them, especially when they are in trouble. I cannot express that enough. The best conversations I have are after I have disciplined a student mm-hmm. and they are super mad at me and I'm the last person that they want to talk to. The moment that I get to, like, go into that discipline with them, whatever it may be, maybe I gave them a detention or whatever, and have that conversation and tell them the reason why is because I care.
Yeah.
And, like, expressing that to them, it makes my job way more enjoyable and way more worth it. And a lot less stressful, too. Because I feel like the students that are typically harder to deal with in other classrooms, they're not as hard to deal with in my classroom. And I think it's because I'm willing to kind of force them to listen to how I see them.
Yeah.
As a student.
I mean, just if you think about it in a relationship sense,
mm-hmm.
It's different because if you're like, say you're driving, right? Mm-hmm. Just a little quick analogy. You're okay. Driving, someone cuts you off or whatever. You are way more inclined to yell at them or think bad thoughts about them or all this other stuff, right?
Yeah.
Stuff that you normally wouldn't do. But if that person, like say you're following your friend to a house and it's your friend that cuts you off, I mean, it might be the same thing, but the way you're angry at them is a lot different.
Absolutely.
Right? And it's like getting mad at the people that you love in your life. They are not, that anger is different than an anger to a stranger.
Yeah.
And if you treat your students like strangers, then that stress that you get is going to be the stress that you would get from strangers.
Yeah.
Which is, it's heavier.
Yeah.
And it's more, it causes your brain to be more frazzled and all this other stuff. So if you approach it with this relationship mindset
mm-hmm.
and are really looking at these students as, you know, your kids, you know, and they're a part of your family, whatever that word means to you,
mm-hmm.
then that, you know, like you said, it's just you're going to get better behavior. Mm-hmm. You're going to get better conversations.
Yeah.
The problems that are there aren't going to beat you down to make you just want to quit and go be an accountant or whatever. So like that, I think that's the most important thing, whether you're a coach or not, is it's the relationship piece.
Yeah.
It has to be.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think, too, it's also made those conversations be a lot quicker because I feel like teachers also can fall into, if a student is causing disruptions and you want to have a conversation with them outside, well, how long do you really want that conversation to last? You still have a classroom full of children behind you doing God knows what. And so when I've built that foundation, and I tell my students, I'm like, you don't have to like me, but you're going to respect me, but I'm going to earn it. I'm going to show you that you can trust me. And so there are an endless amount of times, especially with one particular student, probably every other day, I had to either stop him at the door before he came into my room, because I could tell he was coming in with a lot of anger and frustration and I'm going to act out and not do anything,
mm-hmm.
or he had to step outside.
Yeah.
But the conversation normally was, do you trust me? Do you know that I am for you? And they have to say yes, because it's true, because I've shown them it is true by sticking up for them in random places, or by not letting them just like sit in their failure and being like, you know what, you're not even trying, I'm leaving you alone. By meeting them where they're at, it's a very quick conversation. Do you know that I'm for you? You know that I am. You have to answer yes, because it is true. Do you trust me? Yes. Do you respect me? Yes. Okay. I need you to act like it. Can you go back in and do those things? Yes. Perfect. And then it's done.
Yeah.
And it's like a 30-second conversation. And so it just, it's, you're setting yourself up for when you show them that you care, and when you really do care, and you take the time at the beginning or to have those a little bit more in-depth, a little bit not as fun conversations, especially when they are mad and frustrated and hurting,
mm-hmm.
then you're making your life so much easier, both in the gym and in the classroom. You're making your life so much easier just because they know that they can trust you and they know that you care. And no matter how mad they are, they can't say you don't.
Yeah.
You've never given them a reason to.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the most important point, I think. And I, you know, usually, you know, each episode that we do of this podcast, there's usually one kind of theme that arises just in the conversation. I think this one, you know, by and large, for coaches, for teachers, for anybody, is just build the relationship. Don't pay lip service to it.
Yeah.
Be the relationship, or, you know, figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
Or else your time is going to be a lot harder than it needs to be. Moving on to the final point is, I just want you to kind of, you know, just offer some advice or words of encouragement for either that person maybe just getting out of college and they really want to be a coach and a teacher,
mm-hmm.
or maybe that person that was like you who just signed on to a job. They are terrified because they're going to teach a content that they weren't prepared to teach,
right?
And are going to jump into coaching and they never really envisioned themselves as a coach. So what would you say to that person?
I think there's two main things, and I feel like one I have touched on and the other one I have not. I think the first is you have got to find at least one, if not multiple people within the place that you work that you can lean on. You are not going to be able to do it by yourself. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your education background is. I don't care how good you are with kids. It does not matter. You have got to find at least one person that you can fully lean on.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean fully. Chris Alegria taught my first period class my first year almost every day. And right. Then I mimicked his lesson for the first 6 weeks.
Yeah. Now I had my co-teacher my first year. Same thing.
Exactly.
Help me.
Yes. Yep. You have got to find that person or that group of people. And it doesn't necessarily have to be in your content, but you have got to find someone. You have to.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the first piece of advice I would give to anyone, no matter where you're at in that journey of teaching, coaching. And then the second would be to find something that you enjoy in every student that you have. You've got to find at least one thing. Mm-hmm. And that advice doesn't come from me. That comes from my mentor teacher when I was student teaching. And she said, the funniest thing, she was like, I don't care if it's you like the way they tie their shoes. You've got to find something that you enjoy about each of your students, because there will be some that will make you think you can never be a teacher again. There will.
Yeah.
They're just, your personality is not going to mesh with every single student that you have. And you also can't control their world outside of your classroom. You just can't. And especially where we teach, we have some students that come with some pretty insane baggage.
Yeah.
And there are endless list of names of students that 99% of the time I thought, I can't do it. They're crazy. And I cannot spend more time with them, or else I'm going to do something where I won't have my job anymore. And if I couldn't find that one thing that I enjoyed about them, I wouldn't have been able to teach them. I wouldn't have been able to be kind to them. I wouldn't have been able to build that relationship with them, no matter how hard it was. I'm not saying that you have to be perfect at it. I mean, there were times where I had sent that one particular child to another teacher for the day because I just couldn't deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be those moments. But I also had to allow that student to come back to my classroom, and I still had to be able to teach the way that I want to teach and be the person that I want to be. Because if you are not enjoying any of the students that you're with, you're not going to teach the way that you want to teach, and you're not going to be the person that you want to be. And that's one thing I hold over my students' heads too. I'm saying, you are making me be the teacher I do not want to be right now.
Yeah.
I don't want to be this strict, and I don't want to be this ugly, and I don't want to be this rude and disciplinary. Like, I don't want to be this, and you're making me be that. And so if you can find at least one thing that you love, not just like, but that you love about each of your students, your day, every day, will be so much more stress-free. Because it's just, you can rely on those things. And then, when you're trying to build those relationships with them, I had one student in my first year say, you don't care about me at all. And I said, how dare you?
Yeah.
And then I began to rattle off all the things that I loved about that student that was unique to them. And not just, well, you're in my class, so I love you.
Mm-hmm.
But something specific. And from that day forward, that student was a rock star. Because they knew that there was something, at least one thing specific that I loved about them. And that will make your life 5 million times better in the classroom and in the gym and just in life.
Yeah, really.
You can do that with coworkers. At least one thing you love.
Teach me, teacher, not only for your students, turns out. It's life lessons.
Life lessons.
Yeah, so, I mean, perfect point to end on. I mean, really, the message, if you listen to this, I don't care if you're a coach, I don't care what you're doing. If you're listening to this podcast, build relationships.
Yeah.
And I know it's harder for others than normal. Trust me, I'm one of those people that I don't build a lot of relationships. But it is one thing that I know it's beneficial in many areas of life. So I want to thank everybody for listening to Teach Me Teacher this episode. I want to thank Mrs. Ha for coming on in the middle of summer to do this wonderful thing and help us kind of build relationships with our students. Hopefully her words were helpful to you as much as it was to me. Go to teachmeteacherpodcast.com. As always, for more, subscribe on iTunes, put a review, send me a comment, do whatever you need to do to show your appreciation for the podcast and Mrs. Ha in this episode. And remember, share this episode with your team. Have a good one.